Suddenly, one boat got on fire. They hit it with a shell, which directly hit the gas tank, which made it catch on fire very quickly. The boat for Habil family was burned, so the other boats closed up at it and tried to put the fire off. The gun boat left the area, so one boat was able to get close and drag it to the shore.
A month and a half after the boat was burned, it was fixed, and Adham and Faiz went back fishing. Fishing as a profession is a major source of income for more than 3,000 fishermen and hundreds of others in the Gaza Strip.
After I pray Fajr or dawn prayer, I take my stuff and go to the fish market. Fish market starts around 6 a.m., so every day I buy some fish and take it to the public market to sell it from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. While staying there, I see different kinds of people, those who can buy and those who can't buy because of poverty. You can see these things from dealing with the people. At the end of the day, you have a lot of things that bother you, and you could make a poem of our lives out of it. I mean how we are humans and we feel for one another. It is these things that we feel that make us right.
Hossein Qasim did not limit himself to writing poetry. His interaction with people and getting introduced to their grief provoked him to write scripts and scenarios for plays and feature films.
I wrote four plays for children. Two of them were produced, while the others were not. I wrote 60 radio episodes. I used to be a radio director, and I directed 120 radio episodes. I wrote a series of 13 episodes. I also wrote a script for a long film named Bleeding of a Heart, talking about the suffering of prisoners in Israeli jails and the suffering of their families, which is based on a novel from Mohammed Nassar named Screams. I also wrote the full script for another film named Volcano, under supervision of Dr. Nabil Abu Ali.
Hossein Qasim continued writing till he got the chance to stand on the stage and in front of the camera to play major roles in many plays, series, and films.
In 1996, I went to an organization named Al Auda for theater and arts. We produced two plays, one named Counted on Who, and the other called The Good Land. Then I shifted to TV work. We produced a Bedouin series called Paths of Yearning. We also produced another series called And You, Jerusalem, Al-Quds, talking dramatically about the Judaization of Al-Quds and how the Israeli occupation tries with all means to take over the houses around it, either by offering money or threatening the owners, along with other means. I also acted the role of a Palestinian prisoner, showing all sorts of torture and suffering they go through in Israeli jails.
If anybody listens to the artist Hossein Qasim, a pressing question will jump into his mind about the reasons why he's selling fish in the market.
This is the reality in our country. As an artist, I have to find another job to be able to earn money to live. Otherwise, I will starve. Because how often will any producer make a film? Every year or once in 2 years? And how much will he give me per film? How much will he even profit from the film to give me? Is he going to be able to give me a fixed monthly salary to pay my rent and live with my children? He will not be able to do that. So I have to find another job. In short, honestly, you have to be an artist with nothing. An artist who can't feed himself. An artist who can't feed his family. I wrote something about that, which says, I am an artist and have a right to be human. I am an artist and have the right to take my art anywhere, to Tunisia, to Syria, or Lebanon. I am an artist, and do you believe that? Till now, I don't have a phone and don't have an address.
This is the condition of the artist Hossein. However, Wissam, who is an actor, is in a different condition. At night, He works as an actor on stage, for wedding parties, in the streets. One in the morning, he works as an electricity technician to feed his family, which cannot depend on what he will gain from acting.
We did the street theater, or what we call the weddings theater. We used to get almost no money for it. After a year or two of doing it, we started to get $5. The first time I got the $5, felt like I received $100,000. When I stood in front of the camera in the film on the Palestinian leader, Awad Selmi, Rifle Lover, I did two things. First, I worked as an electricity technician. Second, I acted in the film. I was paid for the electricity work more than for the acting. This is a real catastrophe, to be paid for electricity work more than my acting.
The Rifle Lover was Wissam's second film, in which he stood in front of the camera, while the first film was Imad Aqil, which he didn't get paid for, and played the role of a spy for the Israeli occupation. Here, the surprise was after the film was showed.
I faced many obstacles and still suffer after the film on the Palestinian leader, Imad Aqil. I do not suffer from the film, but from the role I played in the film. Today, I got used to it. When I walk in the street, somebody would say, "Hey, you're a spy," and I would smile at him. But I would say to myself, this is not a problem. As long as the people know me and remember me, this is a success. This acceptance from people makes me feel better.
This is regarding art in Palestine, but Equestrian has a different story as well.
This club was founded in 1993. There were a group of horsemen who used to organize races near the eastern borders. They were frequently harassed by the Israeli occupation soldiers. They sent a request to the late president, Yasser Arafat, to allocate a place for them to organize the races, and he gave them this 30 dunam piece of land. But unfortunately, there were a lot of obstacles, especially financial ones, which prevented equestrian from being practiced as desired.
The management of the club faces a lot of difficulties in getting the horses in. Second, horses in Gaza are very scarce and it is very hard to find good ones. Another problem is prices of the horses, as not every horseman can afford a horse, and this puts pressure upon the management of the club, which cannot provide all these horses. This is a big problem.
After the Equestrian Club was founded in northern Gaza, Al-Faisal Equestrian Club was founded in Gaza City. These are the only two clubs in the Gaza Strip that teach horsemen and horsewomen on hurdle jumping. This sport requires having trained horses as well as talented and qualified trainers to arouse this sport in a country where this sport never existed before.
We in the Al-Faisal Equestrian Club are the second place in the Gaza Strip to produce strong Palestinian horsemen. The largest portion of our activities is for hurdle jumping, which takes up to 80%. 10% goes to races and 10% to shows of Arab horse beauty. Hurdle jumping is the main focus of the club, so we can participate in external tournaments. All the horses we use here are trained locally. We train them. We didn't buy trained horses from outside. تدريبنا احنا ما اشتغلناش غير مدربه وجاهزه من برا لذلك نرى ان الكثير من الخيول Therefore we believe that many of our horses are not qualified to participate in external tournaments. So when a Palestinian horseman wants to compete outside Palestine, he will have to rent horses from the country he is competing in. When the horseman is not used to the horse he is riding and the horse is not used to him, This is a very serious problem for the horseman to achieve anything.
Sixteen-year-old Ayal Ajrami is a horsewoman training on hurdle jumping. With hopes of achieving an ambition, she has always dreamed of representing Palestine in international tournaments.
My ambition is to become a famous horsewoman and to participate in tournaments and win high ranks. This way, I would represent Palestine and show the world that Palestine is a country that has a horseman like any other country, a country that has everything as all other countries have.
We try to interact with the Arab countries, as most of the tournaments there are based on hurdle jumping. So we always try to pick a suitable team, and we have won advanced ranks in various occasions. We have a good group of horsemen who can achieve impressive results to whichever Arab country you send them.
If Aya wants to continue training on hurdle jumping, to participate in international tournaments, she has to own a horse to train with anytime she wants.
I have a horse that I bought about a month ago. When I bought it, we faced a lot of difficulties getting it through the side of the Israeli occupation. And it was very hard to get it in. At the same time, this horse doesn't have all the desired qualities found in external horses.
Ayal Ajrami wishes to someday represent Palestine in international tournaments in hurdle jumping. However, Mohammed Fannouna, who is handicapped, had already participated in international tournaments for athletics and won various medals. He stood in front of the podiums with pride despite the hard circumstances this Palestinian champion went through.
Regarding visual impairment, B1 is totally impaired, B2 is partially impaired for a certain level, and B3 is partially impaired for a lower level. I am diagnosed with B3, which is considered the lowest category. In Athens, I won the bronze medal for long jumping, and in 2010, I won a gold medal in the ASEAN in Guangzhou, China. I also participated in the world tournament in 2002 and won 4th place in long jumping and 5th place in javelin. In the year 2000-2001 in Tunisia, I won 2 gold medals in long jumping and javelin. Each country had a protocol of sounding the national anthem, so my feelings at that moment described themselves as a Palestinian athlete who was able to get there and reach that level despite the hard circumstances we live, being political division, siege, and lack of resources. There are countries that created a character and status and value for themselves through sports, and this is related to willpower. The Palestinian people are persecuted and occupied, and willpower is their strongest weapon. However, the disabled who belong to Palestine and our Palestinian athletes should be given more attention and support, and we have to all learn from them.
What we can learn from the handicapped is their ability to achieve victories. Hamid Zakout is an international athlete in javelin, discus throwing, and shot put. He won various medals in international tournaments, but he suffers from very hard circumstances, which any handicapped athlete suffers in getting to the podiums.
These are the achievements in Arab and international tournaments. We have proved our ability to the world, despite all the suffering and hard circumstances we went through, especially the siege, in the full meaning of the world siege, and despite our humble resources, or simple resources, or maybe I can say without any resources, compared to the large countries we have faced and beaten in these competitions. One of the major obstacles is that the athlete needs an income to continue. If I were not an employee, I wouldn't have come to train in the first place, and sports wouldn't be important to me, because I would be concerned mainly about supporting my family and fulfilling their financial needs.
Numbers of people with special needs rise day after day in Palestine as violations by the Israeli occupation continue. During the war in Gaza in 2008-2009, about 5,000 Palestinians were injured. 600 of them were disabled, and they were mostly youth. Therefore, some civil society organizations started to respond to some of their needs, which was the case with Al-Taysir Society for Marriage and Development.
The goal or mission of Al-Taysir Society is to provide some financial support to needy young men to get married. In 2010, we decided to help young men who were injured during the war because they became a deprived group. After they were young and strong and able to do anything they want, they suddenly became disabled and unable to do basic things. We found it our duty as Palestinians who can help these people to take the decision of helping them by providing anything they need to get married.
Munzer Krayem is one of those who were injured during the war by shrapnel of drone missile while he was walking in one of the streets in Gaza.
I was injured on the 4th of January 2009. We were in Jaffa Street after evacuating our house during the war. I was injured in my left leg, my cheek, and my neck. My injury in the left leg caused a disability, as it became 10 centimeters shorter. In the surgeries I had, they took bones from my right leg and put them in the left leg, so the shortage became 8 centimeters.
Abdel Fattah Jaddour was injured inside his house on the 5th of January 2009 when he was 16 years old. Abdel Fattah's family gathered in one room in an attempt to find peace together, but their gathering did not last for long.
Around 9 p.m., we were sitting upstairs in the balcony. Suddenly, the Israeli occupation's Apaches targeted us with one or two missiles. When the missile exploded, my eyes popped and exploded, and my head was fractioned. They put platinum in my head, and these are plastic eyes now. My brothers who were in the room, Lutfi, Hashim, and Ghazi, died immediately, and they are martyrs in the paradise. May Allah have mercy on them, while Wissam, Mahmoud, and I were injured.
2 years after the war, Al-Taysir Society organized a communal wedding for some of the war disabled. Krayem and Jaddour were among the grooms in this wedding.
I was very happy and delighted that I'm getting married to an injured man who was defending Palestinian people. All the people around me were happy that I'm marrying an injured man, defending his fellow Palestinians.
Thanks to Allah, after we got married, we had a baby. She was a girl, and thanks to Allah, we were very happy to have her. I forgot about the injury, the pain, and the suffering. When I play with my baby girl, we laugh a lot, thanks to Allah.
After we got engaged, I was very happy to get married to Abdel Fattah. I got pregnant after we got married, and 9 months later, I gave birth to Lutfi. Thanks to Allah, he brought happiness and joy to his father and I, to his grandmother, and to the whole family. We were happy to have him. Thanks to Allah.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned. Whoever trusts in Allah only and administers the affairs based on His teachings will reach salvation both in this world and the hereafter. Allah is the only one that has been successful in all the affairs given to Him. This is why Allah refers the people in the Quran to the examples that had trust on Him to learn from their stories. The Godvary are those who made the covenant with Allah, and the unbelievers are those who had trust in entities other than Allah. Therefore, we must believe in Allah as the sole administrator of the affairs. We must also act upon His plans in our life so that we become God-wary. This means that in all aspects of our life, we only consider Allah and we only trust in His plans for our life. This strategy includes all dimensions of our life, from trivial points to the biggest ones. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the Limelight.
Economists have announced in their final estimate that the U.S. economy shrank for the second consecutive quarter in the 3 months ending in December. The latest figures released about the U.S. economy meet these experts' criteria for recession in technical terms, while rising inflation and rising bank interest rates have weighed on spending. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. Experts believe that the United States is going to enter a rolling recession, meaning individual sectors decline in turn rather than all at once. Despite US officials' claim that unemployment being at its lowest point and gross domestic product or GDP rising 2.1% in 2022, inflation remains relatively high at 6.5%. Technology companies continue to lay off people by their thousands, and manufacturing is in a downturn. On top of that, the housing market is experiencing its worst sales slump since the Great Recession. While 69% of reporting companies missed analysts' expectations for the last quarter. During an appearance at a National Retail Federation event in January, Liz Ann Saunders, chief investment strategist at Charles Schwab, publicly stated that the economy will suffer from rolling recessions. Despite clear signs of a weak handover to 2023, some economists are cautiously optimistic the economy will skirt an outright recession. U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell did little to calm investors in recent days, saying, "This cycle is different from other cycles. It just has confounded all sorts of attempts to predict." According to CNN, some economists believe that this perplexing economy points to signs of a rolling recession. Liz Ann Saunders said in January that during the COVID-19 pandemic, pockets of weakness were created in the economy in sectors such as housing and services, as everybody was locked down at home. Residential investment suffered its seventh straight quarterly decline, the longest such streak since the collapse of the housing bubble triggered the 2007-2009 Great Recession. There are signs the housing market is not in a good shape now. Mortgage rates have been trending lower as the U.S. Federal Reserve slows the pace of its interest rate hikes. Sungbon Son, a finance and economics professor at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, California, told the Reuters news agency, "A large portion of the reaction to higher interest rates is already in the economy and the financial markets. Since the U.S. Federal Reserve has succeeded in precipitating a rolling recession, it is time to think about an exit strategy." Inflation also subsided in the fourth quarter. A measure of inflation in the economy rose at a 3.2% rate, retreating from the third quarter's 4.8% pace of increase. Companies outside the technology industry, as well as interest rate-sensitive sectors like housing and finance, are hoarding workers after struggling to find labor during the pandemic. Yahoo said on Thursday it plans to lay off more than 20% of its total workforce as part of a major restructuring of its advertisement technology division. The company said the cuts will will impact nearly 50% of Yahoo's advertising technology employees by the end of this year, including nearly 1,000 employees in the coming days. Yahoo, which is owned by private equity firm Apollo Global Management since a $5 billion buyout in 2021, claimed that the move would enable the company to narrow its focus and investment on its flagship and business called DSP, or Demand Side Platform. Russia's Sputnik News Agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A Gallup opinion poll showed recently half of Americans say their financial situation has worsened in comparison with the previous year, which is a record high since 2009. The pollster said, reflecting on their personal financial situations, 35% of the American public say they are better off now than they were a year ago, while 50% say they are worse off now compared to a year ago. It added, since 1976, when Gallup first asked this question, the share of Americans who expressed such concerns was higher only twice, during the Great Recession era in 2008-2009, and last year 41% of Americans said they're better off, and the same number of respondents expressed the opposite view. The estimate of personal financial situation is closely related to income. The opinion poll revealed that lower-income people more often feel they're losing ground. The survey read, most lower-income Americans, 61%, say their financial situation has deteriorated over the past year, while less than half that number, 26%, indicate that it has improved. Middle and upper-income Americans are also more likely to say they're worse off than better off, but by much narrower margins than seen among the lower-income group. Faced with high inflation and other concerns, almost two-thirds of Americans remain pessimistic about their financial prospects. 60% of the American public expect to be worse off a year from now, while 28% predict they will be better off. Also, a majority of Americans are largely pessimistic about national macroeconomic conditions. U.S. broadcaster CBS News has also covered this story and tells us more. A report says millions of Americans are facing a hunger cliff as more than 30 states plan to phase out emergency food stamp benefits next month. According to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the cuts, which will take effect in March, will impact more than 30 million people who are enrolled in the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, across 32 states. Ellen Wollinger, director for SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, at the Food Research and Action Center, said, "This hunger cliff is coming to the vast majority of states, and people will, on average, lose about $82 of SNAP benefits a month. This is a stunning number." She added, "That means a family of four could see their monthly benefit cut by about $328 a month. The worst hit could be elderly Americans who received the minimum monthly benefit." According to Ellen Wollinger, the SNAP payments would fall from $281 to as little as $23 per month. Beginning in March of 2020, SNAP, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, was expanded to allow households to receive the maximum benefit instead of income testing and allocating aid based on how much they earned. Some 18 states had already ended their emergency allotments. The remaining 32 states that have continued their additional aid are losing that extra money in March due to a provision in the 2023 omnibus spending bill signed into law in December that directs the emergency allotments to end next month. California and Texas, with 5.1 million and 3.6 million recipients respectively, are among states that are facing imminent reductions in food benefits. And New Mexico is home to the highest number of SNAP beneficiaries per capita, with more than 3 in 10 households in New Mexico currently receiving augmented food benefits. Deputy Director for SNAP at FRAC, Gina Platanino, told CBS News, "You're going to see, as the months go along, more families being hungry, more people visiting food banks, and just seeing the terrible effects that this had on all of these people." Analysts have warned that many Americans continue to struggle with food insecurity. They say with food stamp cuts being signed into law in December, neither states nor individuals have had much time to prepare.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, din al-Islam, din al-Islam,
din al-Islam, din al-Islam, din al-Islam, din al-Islam, in the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic rules or laws about purity according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, When the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of Tahara or purification. Sheikh Javid, for some time, this is the question or one of the questions that we received, that the individual says that for some time I was not wiping the tips of my toes while performing the mass or the wiping in the wudu. I was only wiping the upper surface of the foot and part of the toes, probably the nails, the toenails. Is this wiping or mass valid? And in case of invalidity, is it obligatory for me to repeat all of the prayers that I've performed with such wudu?
Well, we know that it is necessary to include the tip of the toes while wiping them, and because one should start wiping from the tip and should wipe all from the tip to the joint, okay, or to the part above the upper sole of the feet. So according to His Eminence, if the tips of the toes are not covered in the wiping process, then the wudu is invalid. Mm-hmm. And when the wudu is invalid, of course, we conclude that the prayers are also invalid. And then we conclude that if the prayers are not invalid, so we should obviously repeat the wudu, mm-hmm, and make them up. Because we didn't know the because of ignorance or because of, or the ignorance could be culpable ignorance or inculpable ignorance. It doesn't make any difference. Okay, in both scenarios, it is necessary that one repeat
the prayers.
Okay, the prayers. But there is also a probability. For example, if a person knew the ruling, and probably there is a kind of possibility.
Right.
The possibility is there that he might have, included the tips of the of his toes while wiping. Then in that case, because of that very probability, the wuzu and the prayers offered by him are valid, and in this case, it is not necessary to repeat them.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, there is another question I would like to ask you about the cap. We hear this a lot, that you have to do the mass, for example, up to the cap, right?
Yes.
So what does it mean, really, when you talk about the cap? Because there are different parts of the, on your legs and foot. For example, you have the ankle, right?
Yes.
it's not to be mistaken with the ankle, right?
Yes, of course. Okay.
So what do we mean by kaab?
Well, kaab is, I suppose it literally means the part which is kind of convex.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We have concave and convex, yes?
Yes.
So the upper sole is...
It's like a bridge.
Yes, like a bridge. The part above the convex, which is called probably its ankle joint, can also be used to refer to that part of the place which should be wiped. And... It is obligatory, in fact, that the wiping is made, according to his Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa, the wiping should be made up to the ankle joint, up to the ankle, and not suffice only to that bridge,
mm-hmm.
yes, that part of the foot, okay?
Right.
Yeah, because it's according to...
So you have to cover it all from the beginning to the end?
Yeah, like from the tip
until
of the...
Until you reach... The ankle joint,
yes. That's mm-hmm. where the wiping should end.
So you shouldn't suffice it to the beginning of the convex.
Yes. One should not suffice to it.
I see. But when you're talking about the wiping, do you mean that how many fingers should be involved? Like the big toe along with the small toe next to it or the rest of the toes? What do you mean?
Any finger... Any of the toes included in the wiping is sufficient. For example, let's say let's give the example of ladies, because ladies use nail polish.
Yes.
They even polish their toes and leave only one toe without polish.
Mm-hmm.
So that's permissible.
So one.
One toe.
Even one toe is considered
the smallest
as,
one. Uh-huh. The smallest one on the left. Okay, the smallest one can be left without polish, and if a woman does the masah or the wiping on that small toe and pulls her hand all up to the
ankle joint,
it is sufficient. So it's not necessary.
The wiping is valid.
Is valid. It's not necessary to wipe on the big toe.
It shouldn't.
It's not necessary.
Necessary.
It's not necessary.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawbit, our guest speaker, talking about the rules of purification or tahara. Sheikh Tawbit, what's your idea or the rule or jurisprudential law concerning wudu done or made and performed in the mosques, centers, government offices built by the government in other Islamic countries?
Well, it is permissible, and there is no, there is no harm in doing wudu in these places, performing wudu in a masjid. There is a special place actually dedicated or devoted to mm-hmm. wudu, and there are places for such purposes, and there shouldn't be any objection to people making wudu in those places. And of course, like if when it comes to government offices or special places, those special places are for special people, people working there, people, you know, doing, offering services. You know, they are recruited people working in the, in for example, army bases, you know. And they have to make their wudu in those places. They can't go out and make wudu in the rivers or elsewhere. So they make wudu and perform prayers in the same place. There is no objection whatsoever to people making wudu in those places.
I see. Okay. What about the places in non-Islamic governments, non-Islamic countries? Like, for example, the offices where you work. Can you use the water from there to make your own wudu?
Why not? It is permissible, and there's no Shari'i impediment with regard to performing wudu in those places either.
Uh-huh. And what about the places where you're going to offer the prayer on? Like inside, not in the mosques, I'm talking about like the government offices where you work in the Western countries.
Oh, it is, you need permission, and it's necessary to make sure that the place where you offer your prayers is not usurped, okay?
Yes.
And that you have the permission from the owner, the actual owner. And unless you are not sure, if you have a general sense of, you generally perceive or understand that there shouldn't be any objection to praying there.
Yes.
Because I think everyone knows, for example, if you're working in a company or an institution, you understand from the general atmosphere prevailing there.
Yes.
And also, depending on your relationship with your boss or your employers, you understand that there shouldn't be any objections. So you can offer your prayers in those premises without explicit permission from your employer.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws. We talked about some of the rules of purification or tahara based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you very much for listening. We bid you farewell from here and from me and the rest of the crew on the team of IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.